Hey guys, welcome back to my channel once again. How the billionaire CEO of SpaceX and Tesla is shaping our future by Ashley Vince. Episode 10, Part 2. The Revenge of the Electric Car. Tesla had thought about doing a hybrid-like fixture where a gas engine would be present to recharge the car's batteries after they had consumed an initial charge. The car will be able to travel 50 to 80 miles after being plugged into an outlet and then take advantage of ubiquitous gas stations as needed to top up the batteries. Eliminating range anxiety, Tesla's engineers prototyped a hybrid vehicle and ran all sorts of cost and performance metrics. In the end, they found the hybrid to be too much of a compromise. It will be expensive and the performance will not be as good as the all-electric car, said J.B. Straubel. And we will have needed to build a team of compete with the core competency of every car company in the world. We will have been betting against all the things we believe in, like the power, electronics and batteries improving. We decided to put all the effort into going where we think the endpoint is and to never look back. After coming to this conclusion, struggles and others inside Tesla started to let go of their anger towards Fisker. They figured he would end up delivering a clerk of a car and get what was coming to him. A large car company might spend $1 billion and need thousands of people to design a new vehicle and bring it to market. Tesla had nothing close to these resources as it gave birth to the Model S. According to the lawyer, Tesla initially aimed to make about 10,000 Model S sedans per year and had budgeted around $130 million to achieve this goal, including engineering the car and acquiring the manufacturing machines needed to stamp out the body parts. One of the things Elon pushed hard with everyone was to do as much as possible in-house, Lloyd said. Tesla will make up for its lack of R&D money by hiring smart people who could outwork and outthink the third parties relied on by the rest of the automakers. The mantra was that one great engineer will replace three medium ones, Lloyd said. A small team of Tesla engineers began the process of trying to figure out the mechanical inner working of Model S. Their first step in the journey took place in the Mercedes dealership, where they test drove a CLS four-door coupe and an E-Class sedan. The car had the same chassis, and the Tesla engineers took measurements of every inch of the vehicle, studying what they liked and did not like. In the end, they preferred the styling on the CLS and settled on it as their baseline for thinking about the Model S. After purchasing CLS, Tesla's engineers tore it apart. One team had reshaped the boxy rectangular battery pack from the Roadster and they made it fit flat. The engineer cut the door out of the CLS and plopped in the pack. Next, they put the electronics that tried the whole system. They tied the whole system together in the trunk. After that, they replaced the interior of the car to restore its fit and finish. Following the 3 months of work, Tesla had in effect built an all-electric Mercedes CLS. Tesla used the car to woo investors and future partners like Delmar that will eventually turn to Tesla for electric powertrains in their vehicles. Now and again, and the Tesla team took the car for drivers on public roads. It waited more than the Roadster, but was still fast and had range about 220 miles per charge. To perform these joyrides, come test is relative secrecy. The engineers had to weld the tips of the exhaust pipes back onto the car to make it look like an other CLS. It was at the time, the summer of 2008, when an RTC car lover named Franz von Holzhausen joined Tesla. His job would be to breathe new life into the car's early design and, if possible, turn them more or less into the iconic product. Point to be noted, at some point from the late 2007 to late 2008, Musk also tried to hire Tony Fadell, an executive at Apple who is credited with bringing the iPhone, an iPhone to life. Fadell remembered being recruited for the CEO job at Tesla, while Musk remembered it more as a chief operating officer type of position. Elon and I had multiple discussions about me joining at Tesla, as Tesla CEO, and he even went to the lengths of staging a surprise party for me when I was going to visit the offices. Fadell said Steve Jobs got wind of these meetings and turned on the charm to keep Fadell. "He was so nice to me for a while," Fadell said. A couple of years later, Fadell left Apple to found Nest, a maker of smart home devices with which Google they acquired in 2014. Holzhausen grew up in a small Connecticut town. His father worked on design and marketing of consumer product, and Franz treated the family basement full of makers, different kinds of paper and other materials as a playground for his imagination. As he grew older, Holzhausen drifted toward cars. He and a friend stripped down a dirty buggy motor one winter and then built it back up, and Holzhausen always filled the margins of his school notebooks with drawings of cars and had pictures of cars on his bedroom walls. Applying to college, von Holzhausen decided to follow his father's path and enroll in the industrial design program at Syracuse University. Then, through a chance of encounter with another designer during the internship, von Holzhausen heard about the Art Center College of Design in Los Angeles. These guys had been teaching me about car design and this school in Los Angeles, and I got super intrigued, said Holzhausen. I went to the Syracuse for 2 years and then decided to transfer out of California. The move of Los Angeles kicked off a long and storied design career in the automotive industry. Holzhausen will go on to intern in Michigan with Ford and in Europe with Volkswagen, where he began to pick up on a mix of design sensibilities. After graduating in 1992, he started to work for Volkswagen on just about the most exciting project imaginable. A top-secret new version of the Beetle. It really was a magical time, Holzhausen said. Only 50 people in the world knew we were doing this project. Holzhausen had a chance to work on the exterior and the interior of the vehicle, including the signature flower was built into the dashboard. In 1997, Volkswagen launched the new Beetle. And von Holzhausen was first-handed how the look of the car captivated the public and changed the way people felt about Volkswagen, which had suffered from woeful sales in the United States. It started the rebirth of the Volkswagen brand and brought design back into their mix, he said. Holzhausen spent 8 years with Volkswagen, climbing the ranks of his design team and falling in love with the car culture of Southern California. Los Angeles has also adored its cars, with the climate lending itself to all the manner of the vehicles, from convertible convertibles to the surf boats, toting vans. Almost all of the major car makers set up design studios in the city. The presence of these studios allowed the world's born Holzhausens to hop from Volkswagen to General Motors and Mazda, where he served as the company's director of design. General Motors taught the von Holzhausen just how nasty a big car company could become. None of the cars in GM lineup really excited him, and it seemed nearly impossible to make a large impact on the company's culture. He saw one member of a 1,000-person design team that divvied up the makes of the cars haphazardly without any consideration as to which persons really wanted to work on which car. They took all the spirit out of me. Said von Holzhausen. I knew I did not want to die there. Mazda, by contrast, needed and wanted help. It let von Holzhausen and his team in Los Angeles put their imprint on every car in the North America vehicle lineup and to produce a set of concept cars that reshaped how the company approached design. As von Holzhausen put it, we brought the zoom zoom back into the look and feel of the car. Von Holzhausen started a project to make Mazda's cars more green by reevaluating the type of material used to fabricate the seats and the fuels going into the vehicles. He had in fact just made an ethanol-based concept car when, in early 2008, a friend told him that Tesla needed a chief designer. After playing a phone tag for a month with Merck's assistant, Mary Beth Brown, to inquire about the positions, von Holzhausen finally got in touch and met Merck for an interview at the SpaceX headquarters. Merck instantly saw von Holzhausen with his bouffant, tan trendy clothes and a laid black attitude as a free-spirited creative compliment and wooed him with vigor. They took a tour of the SpaceX factory in the Hawthorne and Tesla's headquarters in Silicon Valley. Both facilities were chaotic and reeked of the startup. Musk ramped up the charm and sold was also sent on this idea that he had a chance to save the future of the automobile and that it made sense to leave his cushy job at a big proven automaker for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Elon and I went for a drive in the roadster and everyone was checking it out. Von Holzhausen said, I knew I could stay at Mazda for 10 years and get very comfortable or take a huge leap of faith. At Tesla, there was no history, no baggage. There was just a vision of products that could change the world. Who will not want to be involved with that? While the Holzhausen knew the risks of going to start up, he could not have realized just how close Tesla was to bankruptcy when he joined the company in just 2008. Musk had chucked the Holzhausen away from the secure job and into the jaws of that. But in many ways, this is what the Holzhausen sought at this point in his career. Tesla did not feel as much as like a car company as a bunch of guys tinkering on an big idea. To me, it was exciting, he said. It was like a garage experiment and it made cars cool again. The suits were gone and so were the veteran automotive hands, Dillard. By the years working in the industry, in their seat, was also sent found the energetic geeks who did not realized that was that what they wanted to do was borderline impossible. Merck's presence added to the energy and gave von Holzhausen confidence that Tesla actually could outflank much larger competitors. Elon's mind was always way beyond the present moment, he said. You could see that he was a step or three ahead of everyone else and 100% committed to the what we were doing. Wells also sent has examined the drawings of the more or less flat by the physical and a clear model of the car and had come away unimpressed. It was a lop, he said. It was clear to me that the people that had been working on these were novices. Muggs realized the same thing and tried to articulate what he wanted, even though the words were not precise. They were good enough to give a voice also and a feel for Mark's vision, that the confidence that he could deliver it onto him. I said, "We are going to start over. We are going to work together and make this awesome." To save money, the Tesla Design Center came to life inside the SpaceX factory. A handful of people on Walls Hall's team took over one corner and put up a tent to add some separation and secrecy to what they were doing. In the traditions of many at Merck's employ, a Walls Hall's had to build his own office. He made a pilgrimage to IKEA to buy some decks and then went to an art store to get some paper and pens. As Von Hall Hussein began sketching the outside of the Model S, the Tesla engineers had started up the project to build another electric CLS. They stripped this one down and to its very core, removing all of the body structure and then stretching the wheelbase by 4 inches to match up with some of the early Model S specification. Things began moving fast for everyone involved in the Model S project. In the span of about 3 months, Paul Hosselson has designed 95% of what people see today with the Model S. Wow. And the engineers had started building the prototype exterior around the skeleton. Throughout this process, Paul Hosselson and Merck stopped every day. Their decks were closed, and the man had a natural rapport. Merck said he wanted an aesthetic that borrowed from Aston Martin and Porsche and some specific function. He insisted, for example, that the car seat 7 people. It was like holy shit. How do we pull this off in a sedan? Walls also said, but I understood. He said 5 kids and wanted something that could be thought of as a family vehicle, and he knew other people would have this issue. Merck wanted to make another statement with a huge touchscreen. This was year before the iPad would be released. The touchscreens that people ran into now and again at airports or shopping kiosks were for the most part terrible. But to Merck, the iPhone and all of its touch function made it obvious that this type of technology would soon become commonplace. He would make a giant iPhone and have it handle most of the car's function to find the right size for the screen. Merck and Wolves, Von Hosselson would sit in the skeleton car and hold up laptops for different sizes, placing them horizontally and vertically to see what looked best. They settled on a 7-inch screen in a vertical position. Drivers all step on the screen for every task except of opening the glove box and turning on the emergency lights, jumps required by the laws to be performed with the physical buttons. Since the battery pack at the base of the car will weigh so much, Merck's designer and the engineers were also always looking for ways to reduce more or less weight in other spots. Merck opted to solve a big chunk of this problem by making the body of the Model S out of the lightweight aluminium instead of steel. The non-battery pack portions of the car has to be lighter than comparable gasoline cars, and making it all aluminium became the obvious decision. Marx said, a fundamental problem was that if we did not make it out of aluminium, the car was not going to be any good. Marx's words, choice, their obvious decision, goes a long way toward explaining how he operates. Yes, the car needed to be liked, and yes, aluminium will be an option for making that that happen. But at the time, car manufacturers in North America had almost no experiences producing aluminium body panels, aluminium dents to tear when worked by the large presses. It also develops lines that look like stretch marks on skin and make it difficult to lay down smooth coats of paint. In Europe, you had some Jaguars and one Audi that were made of aluminium, but it was less than 5% of the market, Marx said. In North America, there was nothing. It only recently that the Ford F-150 has arrived as mostly aluminium. Before that, we were the only one. Inside of Tesla, attempts were repeatedly made to talk Marx out of an aluminium body, but he will not budge, seeing it as the only rational choice. It will be up to the Tesla team to figure out how to make the aluminium manufacturing happen. We knew it could be done, Marx said. It was a question of how hard it would be and how long it would take us to sort it out. Just about all of the major design choices with the Model S came with similar challenges. When we first talked about the touchscreen, the guys came back and said, there's nothing like that in the automotive supply chain, Marx said. I said, I know, that's because it's never been put in the fucking car before. Marx figured that the computer manufacturers had tons of experiences making 7-inch laptop screens and expected them to knock out of a screen for Model S with relative ease. The laptops are pretty robust, Marx said. You can drop them and leave them out in the sun and then still have to work. After contacting the laptop suppliers, Tesla's engineers came back and said that the temperature and vibration loads for the computers did not appear to be up to automotive standards. Tesla supplier in Asia, Luke, also kept pointing the car maker to its automotive divisions instead of its competing divisions. As Marx dug into the situation more, he discovered that the laptop and screen simply had not been tested before under the right tougher automotive condition, which include date a large temperature fluctuations. When Tesla's performed the test, the electronics ended up working just fine. Tesla also started working hand in hand with the Asian manufacturers to perfect their then immature capacitive touch technology and to find ways to hide the wiring behind the screens that made the touch technology possible. I'm pretty sure that we ended up with the only 7-inch touch screen in the world, and Marx said none of the computer makers on Apple had made it work yet. The Tesla engineers were radical by automotive industry standards, but even they had problem full committing to Marx's vision. They wanted to put in a bloody switch or a button for the lights, Marx said. Why would we need to switch when it's dark? Turn the lights on. Next, the engineers put up resistance on the door handles. Marx and Von Holzhausen had been studying a bunch of preliminary design in which the handles had yet to be drawn in and started to fall in love with how clean the car looked. They decided that the handles should only present themselves when a passenger needed to get in the car. Right away, the engineers realized this would be a technological pain, and they completely ignored the idea in one product version of the car, much of the dismay of Marx and Wolf Holhushan. This prototype had the handles peeved instead of popping out, Von Holzhausen said. I was upset about it, and Elon said. why the fuck is this different? We are not doing this. To crank up the pace of the model as designed, there were engineers working all day and then others who had shown up at 9 p.m. and they worked through the night. Both groups huddled inside of the 3,000 square foot tent placed on the SpaceX factory floor. The workspace looked like a reception area at an outdoor wedding. The SpaceX guys were amazingly respectful and didn't pick or ask questions, said Ali Javedan, one of the main engineers. As Von Holthus and delivered his specifications, the engineers built the prototype body of the car. Every Friday afternoon, they brought what they had made into a country yard behind the factory where Musk would look it over and provide feedback. To run tests on the body, the car would be loaded up with the ballast to represent 5 people and then do loops around the factory until it overheated or broke down. The more Von Holthusen learned about Tesla's financial struggles, the more he wanted the public to see the Model S. Things were so precarious and I did not want to miss our opportunity to get things finished and show it to the world, he said. The moment came in March 2009, when, just 6 months after Holthusen has arrived, Tesla unveiled the Model S at the press event and held at SpaceX. Amid rocket engines and hunks of aluminium, Tesla showcased a gray Model S sedan from a distance and displays more look glamorous and refined. The media sports reports from the day described the car as the love child of an Aston Martin and a Maserati. In reality, the sedan barely held together. It still had the base structure of a Mercedes CLS, although no one in the press knew that, and some of the body panels and the hood were stuck to the frame with magnets. Okay, they could just slide the hood right off, said Bruce Lee, a Tesla owner invited to attend the event. It wasn't really attached. They would put it back on and try again to get the Fiat and finish the ride, but then someone will push on it and it will move again. It was one of those wizard of Oz men behind the certain moments. A couple of Tesla's engineers practiced test driving the car for a couple of days leading up to the event, make sure that they knew just how long the car would go for it overheated. While not perfect, display accomplished exactly what Musk was intended. It reminded people that Tesla had a credible plan to make electric cars more mainstream and that its cars were far more ambitious than what big-time automakers like GM and Nissan seems to have in mind, both from a design and a range perspective. The massive reality behind the display was the odds of Tesla's advancing the Model S from prop to sellable car were in festival. The company had the technical know-how and the will for the job. It just did not have much money or a factory that could crank out cars by thousands. Building an entire car will require blanking machines that take sheets of aluminium and chop them up into the appropriate size for those hoods and body panels. Next up will be the massive stamping machines and metal dies used to take the aluminium and behind it into precise shapes, then there will be dozens of robots that will aid in assembling the cars, computers, controlled milling machines, and precise metal work, painting equipment, and a baby of others' machines for running tests. It was an investment that will run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. Musk will also need to hire thousands of workers. As with SpaceX, Musk preferred to build as much of Tesla's vehicles in-house as possible, but the high costs were limiting just how much Tesla could take on. The original plan was that we would do final assembly, said Diarmuid O'Connell, the vice president of the business and development of Tesla Partners, who stamp out the body parts or do the welding and handle the painting and ship everything to Tesla, where workers will turn the parts into a whole car. Tesla proposed to build a factory to handle this type of work first in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then later in San Luis, California, and then pulled back on these proposals, much to the dismay of city's officials in both locales. The public hemming and hawing around picking the factory site did little to inspire confidence in Tesla's ability to knock out a second car and generated the same type of negativity headlines that had surrounded the Roadster protected delivery. O'Connell has joined Tesla in 2006 to help solve some of the factory of financing issues. He grew up near Boston in a middle class Irish family and went on to earn a bachelor's degree from Dartmouth College. After that, O'Connell attended the University of Virginia to get a master's degree in foreign policy and Northwestern, where he got an MBA from the Kellogg School of Management. He had finished himself a scholar out of the Soviet Union of its foreign and economic policy and had studied these areas at UV, but then in 1989, they are starting to close down the Soviet Union, and at very least, I had a brand problem, O'Connell said. It started looking to me like I was heading to a career in academia or intelligence. It was then that O'Connell's career took a detour into the business world, where he became management consultant working for the McCann Erickson Worldwide, Young and Rubikin, and Accenture advising companies like Coca-Cola and AT&T. Hey guys, thank you for being with me. See you in part 3, episode 10, The Revenge of the Electric Car. Love you all.